Our test scores were abysmal. We had more failures than you knew what to do with.
The grand bargain was struck. The field in education agreed to a number of reforms.
We got rid of our band program. We got rid of our library and literally focused on reading and math instruction.
I'm waiting for them to say, we were wrong, and these were racist policies.
It was 25 years ago today that the state of Massachusetts began a sweeping overhaul of public school education. The Education Reform Act, signed into law on that day, increased state funding to local school systems, set learning goals for all schools, and created a testing system by which schools are measured. It's dramatically changed how schools operate. And all this week, we'll be examining the effort in an Edify series called Pass-Fail, Evaluating 25 Years of Education Reform. WBUR Edify reporters Carrie Young and Max Larkin have spent months looking at what's happened to Massachusetts schools in the past 25 years and join us now. Hi to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning, Bob.
Carrie, you first. Big picture, Massachusetts public school system right now appears to be the envy of the country.
In a lot of ways, that's true. Standardized tests like the National Assessment of Educational Progress, also known as the NAEP, show Massachusetts students are consistently scoring the highest in the country. The state ranked number one nationally last year, actually. And if Massachusetts were a country, it would rank among the highest in the world. It's been consistently scoring among the top 10 over the last couple of cycles.
But Bob, whether that means the goals of the reform that we saw traced 25 years ago, whether those goals are being met is another question. There are still really big disparities between the best schools in Massachusetts and the ones that are considered underperforming. And this 25-year reform process, it hasn't necessarily been able to close those gaps.
And some education reform efforts remain pretty controversial 25 years on.
You're right. And charter schools being one of those education policies where it's really hard to get a lot of agreement on. There's a lot of very loyal supporters of the charter school system here in Massachusetts, but there's also a lot of harsh critics.
And then there's that familiar phrase we've been hearing for almost as long as there's been this test, teaching to the test. We've heard from parents and educators who say testing has just taken up way too much oxygen in classrooms in the state. And then, Bob, we'll take a look at the world beyond the MCAS test. There are a few communities that are experimenting with assessments that are supposed to be more comprehensive, to take a deeper look at what students are actually learning in our classrooms.
Okay, with that as the backdrop, we begin our series this morning with the origins and early goals of ed reform.
In 1993, Brockton was poised to become ground zero for education reform.
You truly had kids that would come in and sit on the radiators. You had books falling apart. You didn't have materials. You didn't have supplies.
Back then, Kathleen Smith was already a veteran elementary school teacher, and she says she was struggling to do her job.
I remember classrooms being put together instead of a fourth and a fifth. It was a combined fourth and fifth class. I taught in classes of 35 students.
At this point, districts like Brockton had been arguing for years that they were underfunded. There was a major difference between school spending in wealthy Massachusetts districts and poor ones, one of the biggest funding disparities in the country, actually. So Brockton led the way in a lawsuit, which made it all the way to the state's highest court. And in 1993, it looked like Brockton was about to win that case.
Aside from the legal pressure to change public education, lawmakers were also feeling political pressure from some major donors in the business community. That effort was spearheaded by a group known as the Massachusetts Business Alliance for Education, and Paul Revel was its executive director at the time.
You know, if the Commonwealth is to be competitive in the 21st century, we need to re-engineer our education system.
Business leaders wanted a much bigger investment in education because they had this growing concern about whether or not the state was preparing the workforce of tomorrow.
Right, but they wanted some strings attached to that spending. Business leaders wanted schools to work more like businesses in an open market.
They proposed ways to keep track of school performance, which would then create incentives for struggling schools to improve.
They also wanted families to have some level of choice about where to send their kids to school.
So you've got business leaders wanting a more accountable school system and teachers like Kathleen Smith demanding more resources. So as Paul Revel explains,
the grand bargain was struck in which the field in education agreed to embrace a number of reforms.
But that bargain, that had to happen in the legislature.
The time has come
Senator Tom Birmingham was one of the co-authors of the eventual Grand Bargain Bill. Here he is back in 1993. He's waving his arms in the Senate chambers, passionately trying to convince his colleagues that there was no time to waste.
Too many of our kids are mired in systems of mediocrity or abject failure. This is a matter of great urgency.
Birmingham hoped his bill would change that. Prior to the early 90s, education funding in the state was mostly based on local property taxes. That meant wealthy communities ended up having a lot more money to spend on their schools than poor communities did. Then came the new law.
We basically equalized the amount of funding spent on kids' education, whether you lived in Weston or Brockton or Chelsea or Lexington.
So the Grand Bargain pumped about $2 billion into state schools, much of it into poorer schools over 10 years. But every district got at least a little bump.
Something for everyone. But it's the other side of the Grand Bargain that's proven to be more controversial, the accountability measures it introduced.
Ah, yes. Most notably, the high-stakes Massachusetts Comprehensive Assessment System, or as you probably know it, the MCAS test.
I look back pre-1993, pre-ed reform, we had certain hunches about which school districts were doing well and which were not, but we didn't have any data to back that up.
With the MCAS, lawmakers finally had a measure they could use across every school, but the results shined a light on how far some communities and demographic groups were behind their wealthier suburban peers.
For Kathleen Smith, the teacher we heard from earlier, getting that first MCAS test back is still with her. It's a vivid memory.
I remember our test scores were abysmal. We had more failures than you knew what to do with.
But around the same time, she says, the extra money started to arrive.
Now you're having adequate class sizes. Now you're bringing in strong researched curriculum. Now you're providing after school.
And even as businesses in Brockton closed, over 10 years, the district managed to turn its test scores around. Smith proudly calls it the Brockton miracle.
Kathleen Smith is still with the Brockton Public Schools today. Now she's the superintendent, and she says that while the district's costs are rising, Brockton has kept its commitment to students. You see that in test scores, as well as award-winning arts programs. But she argues the state hasn't kept its end of the bargain.
And today, she says she's seeing many of the same problems that the district experienced in the 1990s crop back up again. Class sizes, for example, are creeping up.
You just cannot continue to decrease our funding and expect that the schools can continue to do the jobs that we were doing in the mid-90s and early 2000s. We are hanging by a thread.
Yep. Brockton is considering suing again. And it's not alone. Several communities, including Worcester, are considering joining that suit because they say, like Brockton, they're struggling to fund basic needs, let alone close those long-standing achievement gaps.
We'll be taking a look at why that might be tomorrow.
For 90.9 WBUR, I'm Carrie Young.
And I'm Max Larkin.